very envious Brahmin named Gopal Chapala. He was the leader of the blasphemers, the nindakas. So he decided he wanted to make Srivas Thakur look very bad. And in those days, if you want to make someone look bad, you portray them as a worshipper of goddess Durga. So this Gopal Chapala, he put on the doorstep of Srivas Thakur the paraphernalia for worship of goddess Durga, such as meat and wine and other unmentionable substances were stacked up on the door. And so the next morning when Srivas Thakur opened his door, he saw all these horrible things. But he was so transcendental, Srivas Thakur, what he did is he called all the local townspeople and said, just see how fallen I am. Now the proof is here. I tried to cover it up. I tried to cover it up for a long time, but here it is, the evidence. I'm a low-class Shakta, a worshipper of goddess Durga, so you don't need to offer me any more respect. The pious people said, who did this? We don't believe this. We know very well. Which sinful man has performed this action? So which sinful person performed the action became manifest 3 days later when Gopal Chapala was struck with leprosy. And as it's a contagious disease, you can't live in the village. You have to go to the bank of the Ganga. And his fingers were melting away. His fingers, toes, nose, and extremities in general melt away under the influence of leprosy. And it's very painful and a horrible disease. So that was the initial reaction. That was just the beginning of his offense against Srivas Thakur. For many years, he had to suffer horribly like that. One day, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was walking to the Ganga to bathe. And this Gopal Chapala, after suffering, one's intelligence generally wakes up after sufficient suffering. Therefore, Maya is actually the greatest preacher. For the people in general who refuse the books of the merciful book distributors, Maya has her program. So after sufficient suffering, which was quite a lot of suffering, he fell at the feet of Lord Chaitanya and begged. He said, you are the most munificent, Namo Mahavaranaya, Krishna Prema, Pradayate. Pradayate means to give. You have come to give ecstatic love of God, Krishna Prema. And you don't distinguish between the low and the high and the elevated, the scholarly Brahmins and the low-class dacoits and thieves. They all get the mercy, he was saying, according to his calculation. So he expressed his heart. And Lord Chaitanya said, you have offended Srivas Thakur, therefore you will have to suffer for 10 million births in leprosy. And that's just the beginning of the suffering. Yamaraj has 14,000 kinds of tortures awaiting you. So this Gopal Chapala, he was just like, he was choked. He couldn't say anything. He was just choked up. He was suffering. He was in terrible anxiety. He was crying and didn't know what to do. Lord Chaitanya said, I'll have you bitten by these worms, because his body was infected by worms, for 10 million births. And then Lord Chaitanya angrily walked on to take his bath, and this Gopal Chapala had to remain there suffering. Years later, when after Lord Chaitanya had taken sannyas and gone to Jagannath Puri, then he returned to Bengal briefly to visit his mother and the Ganga. And again, this Gopal Chapali came and fell down and began begging and crying. And Lord Chaitanya said, if you can't tolerate this suffering, how will you tolerate the many tortures awaiting you in the future? So then Gopal Chapala began crying and said, but you're the most munificent, the most magnanimous. Please, at least give me some formula. There must be some kind of atonement. So then Lord Chaitanya said, if you beg forgiveness from Srivas Thakur, then your offense can be relieved. And only in that way can it be mitigated. The offense to a pure devotee is so severe, even Krishna himself cannot remove that offense. Even Krishna himself cannot remove the offense. So this Gopal Chapala, at that point he had trouble even moving. So he somehow or other, he crawled, you know, and pulled himself, and he went to Srivas Thakur and he begged. And Shivas Thakur is an ocean of mercy. He didn't even initially, as we recall, he didn't even take the offense seriously. He wasn't even trying to avoid being denigrated as a Shakta. He was rather happy to advertise himself as a fallen person. Such are the magnanimous qualities of the pure Vaishnavas. So Shivas immediately forgave him with great concern. Oh, you've been suffering for so long. This is very unfortunate. Yes, I immediately forgive you. As soon as he was forgiven, he was freed from leprosy. And then when he went to Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya gave him ecstatic love of God. So the story has a very happy ending. He actually became a pure devotee by the power of Shivas Thakur. In fact, Vrindavan Das Thakur says in Chaitanya Bhagavat that even the cats in the house of Shivas became devotees. The cats, the maidservants, all kinds of persons, anyone who happened to be in the house of Shivas Thakur, because Shivas was such an elevated Vaishnav. Anyone, even there was one tailor who was a meat eater, he was sewing clothes for Shivas Thakur, not even following the four regulative principles. He could not control his senses. He was a very fallen soul, but somehow or other he was rendering service to Shivas Thakur. And one day Lord Chaitanya walked by and just revealed his form as Krishna. Just all on the spot, just all of a sudden he just revealed himself to this humble Muslim tailor. And the tailor began jumping and shouting in ecstasy and saying, "I have seen, I have seen." And it's described he became a pure devotee from then on without any sadhana, no mangalartik, no 16 rounds, nothing. He instantly, by kripa siddhi, by the power of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, he instantly became a pure devotee. It says an intimate associate of the Lord from then on. Such is the power of a pure Vaishnav. This is our major theme. In our Vaishnava theology, by serving a pure devotee, you get so much benefit. The whole internal world of hearing and chanting about Krishna, which is utterly inaccessible to a conditioned soul, becomes accessible simply by virtue of serving a pure devotee of the Lord. If we take our situation into account, we're not really qualified to experience the higher transcendental pleasure of devotional service by hearing and chanting the pastimes of the Lord unless we serve a pure devotee. It is not until we render service very seriously to the mission of the pure devotee that we actually get a taste for hearing and chanting. It is impossible. There's no access. It's like the door is locked. The door to prema bhakti is locked. Even Krishna doesn't open it. He could open it. Krishna's the reservoir of all transcendental love, but he doesn't. He follows his own policy. His own policy is that he will not give ecstatic love unless we serve a pure devotee. And this policy is very clearly described in the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 4, with Maharaj Ambarish. After Dravas Muni had offended Maharaj Ambarish, and Dravas was so powerful he could go to the gates of Vaikuntha, and he fell down at the gate with the Sudarshan Chakra burning his back, and he was calling out to Lord Narayan, "Oh Lord Narayan, you're the ocean of mercy, please save me from this difficult situation. Your personal weapon is chasing me." So Lord Narayan came to the gate and looked at the Brahman. And he said, "I am not independent. I am completely under the control of my devotees. Because you have offended my pure devotee, the offense is so severe, I cannot forgive you. You will have to go back and get the sanction, the forgiveness of Maharaj Ambarish." And he went all the way back. Dravas Muni went all the way back to the earth planet and fell at the feet of Maharaj Ambarish, the person he had tried to kill. And Maharaj Ambarish was so merciful, he immediately asked the Sudarshan Chakra to stop burning the back of Dravas Muni. He offered prayers to the Sudarshan Chakra. And then he said, I wish that all of my great pious merits be given to this Brahmin Dravas. Aside from being relieved from the suffering of the Sudarshan Chakra, I want to give all my pious credits to him. This is how great a personality Maharaj Ambarish was. So it's service to a pure devotee is so powerful and offenses to a pure devotee are so deleterious. The Shastras are loudly describing this again and again. Another pastime is with Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur not only chanted 300,000 holy names every day, which is 192 rounds, he also found time to preach every day. His entire eating and sleeping took 1 or 2 hours a day. So there was a big meeting that Govardhan and Hiranya Majumdar were having. These were the father and uncle of Raghunath Das Goswami. So they were having a big meeting of pious. In those days, very pious people would get together to discuss the Shastras. And specifically, this meeting was aimed at discussing the glories of the holy name. So Haridas Thakur didn't come because he felt himself very unqualified to describe the glories of the Lord's holy name, even though he's the Nam Acharya. His humility was inconceivable, actually. Whenever there was an assembly of devotees, he would think himself unqualified to go. He thought, I'm too fallen. I'll just bring the whole assembly down with my low mentality. And when Lord Chaitanya and his personal associates would meet, such as Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Vakreshvara Pandit, Lord Nityananda, and Giradhar, all the exalted, pure devotees of the Lord would meet with the Lord to have ecstatic Krishna Katha. Haridas Thakur would be seen laying out on the common road, 100 meters away, just offering dandavat obeisances to the assembled Vaishnavas, thinking himself too fallen to come. And then Lord Chaitanya would ask some devotees to come and bring Haridas, and Haridas Thakur would say, no, I am too fallen. I don't deserve to come. The devotees would pick him up physically. Lord Chaitanya demands he must come. So they would carry him. They would have to carry him to the assembly. But still he would try to sit on the door on the outside, just outside the door. Always considering himself abominable and untouchable. So he didn't come to the assembly, but Govardhan and Hiranja Manjumadara were very learned and they knew very well the glories of Haridas Thakur. So they insisted that he come. So he came, and with folded hands, all the assembly began to ask him to describe the glories of the Lord's holy name. So he began describing that liberation is the insignificant byproduct. Just as when the sun begins to rise, the first faint rays of the dawning of the sun immediately destroy all sinful reactions and give liberation. Similarly, just the Nam Abbas, Abbas means reflection, just the reflection of the Lord's holy name, Nam Abbas, is enough to give liberation and to extinguish all sinful reactions. So the entire assembly was very pleased to hear Haridas Thakur's speech, which seemed to them like a stream of nectar. But there was one envious person, they're a tax collector, and his name was also Gopal, Gopal Chakravarti. Even the rascals in India get the names of Krishna and Ram. One of the great benefits of being born in India. So this Gopal Chakravarti, he was very envious, and he began saying, just hear the statements of this emotional devotee. He said, this Haridas Thakur is simply a sentimentalist. According to Shastra, one does not get liberation until one performs many lifetimes of severe austerities and tapasya. And this man is saying that simply by chanting of the Lord's holy name, a faint glimpse of the chanting of the holy name, one achieves liberation? This is nonsense. He was insulting Haridas Thakur, telling that Haridas Thakur is just an emotional sentimentalist, doesn't know the Shastra. And then he turned to Haridas and said, if liberation is not available by Namabhas, I will cut off your nose. So his cup of offenses overflowed at that point. And everyone in the assembly was completely shocked. They said, get rid of this sinful rascal. They threw him out immediately because they knew Haridas Thakur was an exalted, pure devotee of the Lord. So they threw this Gopal Chakravarti out. And within 3 days, he contracted leprosy, and his beautiful, he was very handsome, he had very He had a golden and handsome features, very beautiful body. Within 3 days, his beautiful raised nose melted away, along with his toes and fingers. That's the last we hear of him. He apparently did not get, or at least it's not stated in Shastra, that he got any reprieve. And actually what is stated is that Haridas Thakur became unhappy when he heard that Gopal Chakravarti was suffering so much. Because of his Vaishnav qualities, this is the quality of a pure devotee. He was actually unhappy that Gopal Chakravarti was made to suffer. This particular pastime appears in Anchalila chapter 3 of Chaitanya Charitamrita. There it is stated by Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, it is the nature of a pure Vaishnav to not take offenses to himself. He does not take notice. It's not that he feels unhappy, but he just controls it by his intelligence. He actually doesn't feel offended. He feels himself so low, ignorant and foolish, that no one can offend him. Whatever someone says is the truth. However bad it is, it's the truth. He's actually thinking like that. So it's stated there in Anchalila chapter 3 that Haridas Thakur, as a pure devotee, did not take seriously the ignorant Gopal Chakravarti's offense, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot tolerate an offense to a pure devotee. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his superhuman magical powers, the Supreme Lord controls everything in all of existence. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena kuntya jagat viparivartate. Everything is under Krishna's control. So Krishna could not tolerate. That was way beyond. At least if he had some scriptural differences with Haridas Thakur, he could have discussed it in a gentlemanly fashion. Let's sit down and show me the quotes. Let's discuss the Shastra and figure out how one achieves liberation. But he deliberately and offensively, in fact, his final statement was unnecessarily offensive. I'll cut off your nose, he said. So there are so many of these pastimes. There was another pastime with a pure devotee of Anantasesh. This is in Chaitanya Bhagavat. Haridas Thakur was walking along. He was always deeply absorbed in ecstasy, chanting the Lord's holy name. So he was walking along, and one great devotee of Anantasesh was singing the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Specifically, he was singing the glories of Krishna's chastisement of Kaliya, the serpent Kaliya. And this pure devotee of Anantasesh, he was singing with such divine love. His voice, the inflections of his voice were choked with emotion and pure love of God. So naturally when Haridas Thakur heard this, he couldn't restrain he was not trying to show any external symptoms, but he actually could not restrain his happiness. So he fell on the ground in ecstasy and began rolling around. And there were hundreds of people there listening to this great pure devotee of Anantasesh describing the glories of the Supreme Lord. So they all saw Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur began rolling and then springing into the air and dancing in ecstasy. And everyone was enlivened. And just seeing that the devotional symptoms of a pure devotee can purify the whole universe, it's actually described. Simply seeing the devotional symptoms of a genuine Mahabhagavat is enough to transform the heart of materialistic people. That's described in the 7th canto. When Prahlad Maharaj was being tormented by Hiranyakashipu, he was just absorbed in ecstasy. Tears were flowing from his eyes. He was simply thinking how merciful Krishna is, how kind Krishna is. He was always parirambitaha, it says in the 7th canto. Parirambitaha means embraced. He felt himself to be always embraced by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda. So he was constantly crying in ecstasy and his bodily hairs were standing up. All the ashta sattvika vikar that I was describing were taking place simultaneously in the body of Prahlad Maharaj. And Prabhupada writes there in purports in the 7th canto that when ordinary people saw it, just seeing his devotional ecstasy, ordinary people became attracted to bhakti yoga. Such is the power of a pure devotee. He doesn't even have to say anything. simply by his nature, his pure nature is so decorated with the transcendental symptoms of love of God. As Krishna is all attractive, those who are linked with Krishna in deep loving devotion are all attractive. So a pure devotee is the best salesman, the transcendental salesman of Krishna's mercy, without even trying, because he's just so absorbed, he's so steeped, Prabhupada says, steeped or saturated, that's the term Prabhupada used, saturated. He's just so saturated with ecstatic love of God that wherever he goes, the people just by seeing him, they become attracted to take up the process of sadhana bhakti. Such was Prabhupada's power also. I missed Prabhupada. I joined in 82, so I was 5 years late. But several devotees told me, who had met Prabhupada directly, Sadaputta Prabhu and Shutadev, who was in charge of the newsletter. He was in the Baltimore temple. He was writing the ecstatic Sankirtan newsletter in the middle 70s. So Shutadev Prabhu and Sadaputta Prabhu and other Prabhupada disciples, they told me when they first saw Prabhupada, just tears started coming out of their eyes. They just didn't know why. Because Prabhupada's Krishna consciousness was so exalted, was so extreme, that anyone who was a little bit pious and non-envious, their hearts would just melt seeing Prabhupada. And just immediately, like, on the spot, you feel like, I want to become a devotee. I want to take part in Prabhupada's ISKCON movement. Such is the power of a pure devotee. Srila Prabhupada said, purity is the force. When we go out to distribute books or preach, how effective we will be depends on how pure we are. And if we're not already pure, then the process of purity is to associate with the supreme pure, that's Krishna. Krishna is the supremely pure personality of Godhead. So when we associate with Krishna by the Nava Anga, the nine limbs of bhakti, then we gradually get purified, because Krishna's purification power is more powerful than our impurities. Sometimes we think our impurities are overwhelmingly impure. We can't. I'm too fallen. It's impossible. How will I ever get purified? Yes, that's a good. That's not a bad start to think like that, and it's true in one sense. But Krishna's power is literally unlimited. No matter how fallen we are, we're still limited being jivas. So Krishna's power to purify us is actually unlimited, because Krishna's like the sun. He has infinite power. So Krishna, when Krishna is actually seated in your heart, as described in Bhagavatam 1.2.17, Srinvatasva Kata Krishna, when the Krishna Kata is performed with taste, then the Supersoul Vidunoti, he cleanses Suhrit Satam. He is the best wisher of the Satam, the pure devotees, or those who are trying to become pure. So when you actually hear and chant with taste, then Krishna actually begins to purify your heart. He eliminates the obstacles which seem insurmountable, which actually are insurmountable by our own endeavor, but they're not insurmountable for Krishna. Krishna is the supreme master of all mystics. The final shloka of Bhagavad Gita, Sanjaya, in his discourse to the blind king Dhritarashtra, Sanjaya is saying, wherever Krishna, yatra yogeshvara Krishna, yoga eshvara, he's the master of all mystic power. Wherever is the master of mystic power, Krishna, and wherever his pure devotee Arjuna, the expert archer, there will be all opulence, power, and victory. That is my opinion. So that's the final verse of the Bhagavad Gita. That's the conclusion given by Sanjaya. Sanjaya was a disciple of Vyasadev, and Vyasadev empowered Sanjaya to be able to see the activities occurring on the battlefield, even many miles away, back at Hastinapur. Sanjaya was able to see by quantum non-local interaction, according to modern terms, quantum non-locality. Or in Vedic terms, prapti. Prapti means long-range acquisition. Non-local acquisition. There's actually no physical boundary. Spatial separation. Space is one of the lower ingredients of existence. So once you transcend space, it really doesn't matter whether you're 1 mile away or whether you're 1 million miles away. You have instant access to other regions of existence by Prapti Siddhi. So Sanjaya was just sitting there, and the blind king Dhritarashtra learned all the details simply by Sanjaya narrating the events, and Sanjaya saw them with crystal clarity. He saw everything going on. When Arjuna cut off the head of Karna with a single arrow, it was repeated, all the details, when Bhishmadev was cut down in battle, all the dramatic incidents of the Battle of Kurukshetra were described in tremendous detail, simply because Sanjaya was able to see this by the power of Vyasadeva. So once again, the power, by the mercy of a pure devotee, you can do anything, you can achieve any level of power, because Krishna is ready to share his powers. Shakti Avesh, to invest Avesh, his shaktis. So this is the beautiful philosophy of Krishna consciousness. There's no limit to how empowered we can become. It's simply up to you. If you want to associate with Krishna by chanting his holy name purely, that's your choice. No one can force you. You have the option. It is your opportunity to associate with Krishna's holy name and become completely purified. So thank you very much. Are there any questions?
My last question was about offending pure devotees, pure Vaishnavas. What about not necessarily pure devotees, or maybe neophyte devotees, offending neophyte devotees?
That is also very deleterious. That is also going to slow down your spiritual... That will also bring your spiritual advancement to a halt or slow it down. If you offend just a devotee in the ashram, in other words, we think just a devotee. We have to realize from the statements of Shastra, Vrindavan Das Thakur and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the great Vaishnava Acharyas are describing in detail, even the most neophyte Vaishnava is very dear to Krishna. Anyone who comes to the ashram, who sincerely tries to take up sadhana bhakti, we know it's not easy to take up sadhana bhakti seriously. So anyone who has surrendered his life to Krishna, Krishna considers a great soul. That person is considered to be a great soul. So if you offend them, you must beg their forgiveness. You should do it immediately, as soon as you return to a sane condition, because offending a Vaishnava is done in an insane condition. You've forgotten. Because we're neophytes, the tendency to make offenses is very large. In other words, if we overeat, then we oversleep and we're in a bad mood and someone wakes us up, we'll make an offense. Or, you know, we don't feel enlivened that day. Basically, it's very easy for us to make offenses. We have to be very careful. We have to guard against offenses. So whenever we do that, and it may occur, then you just go with folded hands and say, Prabhu, I'm really sorry. You know how it is, we're neophytes, my mind and senses got out of control, please forgive me. And generally devotees are very merciful, they'll forgive you, because the next time around he'll offend you, and he shouldn't be too proud to think that he won't be in the same situation. So we're all in it together, basically. We should all try to help each other in a collective mood of getting free from inadvertent offenses. We really didn't want to offend a devotee. Now a much more serious thing is if you develop a vendetta, like you start to meditate in your mind how there's something wrong with some other devotee. I don't like him. I really want to bring him down. I want to get him thrown out of the ashram. If you make an intentional vendetta, then you're in deep trouble spiritually. Krishna will not forgive you. You will have to suffer. So we have to be very careful. This is the Shastra, Shastric injunctions. Actually, if you read Chaitanya Bhagavat by Vrindavan Das Thakur, and this book, Prabhupada said we should read this book, even though Prabhupada himself did not translate it. And the proof is it's in the introduction to Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, which is a long 35-page description of the life of Lord Chaitanya. If you read Prabhupada's introduction to the first canto, he's describing it. It's a long 35 pages worth of describing the life and teachings of Lord Chaitanya in Bhagavatam. Right in the very beginning, just Lord Chaitanya. Prabhupada is showing us that the life and teachings of Lord Chaitanya is the most efficacious way to advance in the age of Kali. Meditating on pastimes and teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So in the midst of this introduction, Prabhupada writes, one will benefit greatly by reading Vrindavan Das Thakur's Chaitanya Bhagavat. Even though Prabhupada didn't have time to translate it, he had to choose between, it's a tough choice, Chaitanya Charitamrita or Chaitanya Bhagavat, they're both so exalted. Those two are, practically speaking, the topmost of all Gaudiya Vaishnava scriptures. So Prabhupada chose Chaitanya Charitamrita, but in the intro to Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says we should read the writings of Vrindavan Das Thakur, especially Chaitanya Bhagavat. And in Chaitanya Bhagavat, again and again and again, at least 10 times throughout the course of the text, Vrindavan Das Thakur is saying, do not offend the Vaishnava, and giving graphic examples. Another example was the 6 sons of Devaki who preceded Krishna, who were killed by Kamsa ruthlessly and brutally. Kamsa was so brutal, when it came to Yoga Maya, he was ready to take the girl, the daughter. He grabbed the little baby by the legs and was ready to smash her head against the cement floor. So when we see deeper, the Shastra explains that actually, of course, he was not successful because that was Yogamaya herself. She slipped out of his hand and flew up in the sky and announced that he was a complete moron. So that was the 7th birth of Devaki, but the 6 ones preceding them, those 6 were brutally murdered by Kamsa. And why did he do this? There's a deeper reason that it's revealed in Chaitanya Bhagavata, Vrindavan Das Thakur, that these 6 sons of Devaki were actually originally 6 demigods in the heavenly planets, and they insulted Lord Brahma. They made an offense to Lord Brahma. Their offense may not even seem so severe. They were just shocked that Lord Brahma had lost control of his senses. He was running after his daughter. He was actually conquered by Cupid, which is very uncharacteristic. Brahma is a highly exalted person with his mind and senses under control almost all the time. Simply because they looked enviously and they disapproved of Brahma's action, they had to take birth first as sons of Hiranyakashipu and be killed. And then after that, they had to take birth as sons of Devaki and were killed brutally by Kamsa. So this is, again and again, Vrindavan Das Thakur is saying over and over again, do not offend Vaishnavas. In fact, in the Mahaprakash, the great revelation, in the house of Srivas Thakur, Lord Chaitanya himself said, O my devotees, listen to me. Anyone who offends Murari Gupta will not be purified by millions of baths in the Ganga. Even millions of repetitions of Lord Hari's holy name, which ordinarily purifies the most sinful person, or millions of baths in the Ganga Devi. Ganga Devi is so purifying. Even Ganga Devi and Hari Nam will not save this rascal. Anyone who offends, just once, if you offend Murari Gupta, even millions of such atonements will not suffice to remove the offense. And on the plus side, if a breeze that is blowing by happens to touch the body of Murari Gupta or Vasudev Dat, and then that breeze touches you, you get ecstatic love of God. It's astronomical, it's colossal, it's inconceivable. The benefits, there's no greater benefit. If you lose your memory, you get amnesia and forget everything else about Vaishnava philosophy. Remember one thing, serve pure devotees. And who's the greatest of pure devotees is Prabhupada. In our time and place, there's no one comparable to Srila Prabhupada. So our fastest ticket back to Godhead is to serve the mission of Srila Prabhupada. And you can feel the advancement you're making. It becomes a tangible fact in your life just by serving Prabhupada's mission. Somehow or other, we have to serve the mission of Prabhupada, then you feel yourself becoming free from anarthas. Lord Chaitanya said, even a breeze touches the body of Vasudev Dat and then touches your body, or Murari Gupta, you get love of God. What could be easier? What is an easier process? Or there was another great Vaishnava named Abhiram Thakur. He had a whip. He had a whip called the Jai Mangala. So what did he do? He would go around, not too hard, he wouldn't hit you too hard, but he would lovingly, in his wonderful, exuberant, ecstatic love of God, this Abhiram Thakur, one of the 12 gopas from Krishna Leela, the associates of Krishna and Balaram in Vrindavan. He would just touch people with his whip and they would get ecstatic love of God. That's Abhiram Thakur. He would go into ecstasy for 9 hours in a threefold bending form, just feeling the ecstatic emotions of Krishna in Vrindavan. He would just freeze in the middle of a roaring kirtan. He would just assume a threefold bending form like Krishna, just deeply absorbed. It's not Mayavadi. Some devotees, it's described in the Krishna book, the gopis, they were actually, each gopi was telling the others, I am Krishna. And it's not Mayavadi. They were just so deeply absorbed in the ecstasy of love of Krishna. They couldn't think of, and they've completely forgot themselves entirely. They were just thinking of Krishna. They were deeply absorbed in the mellows of Krishna consciousness. So from the Shastra, we should understand how exalted pure devotees are and what the benefits of serving pure Vaishnavas. Again and again and again, it's throughout the Shastras. Lord Chaitanya would assemble all the devotees and say, my devotees, my body is no longer my own property. I've sold myself to Vasudev Dat. I'm no longer, this. I don't even own my body. He can sell me in any marketplace. If he chooses to sell me, I'm sold. I'm no longer independent. I'm now your property. If Vasudev Dat wants to sell me to you, then I become your slave. He would say, oh devotees, I'm not speaking a lie. And he'd say it again and again and again, just to make sure everyone knew. Of course, Vasudev Dat was so humble, he didn't want to be glorified. It was an embarrassment. He would try to slink away. Or Haridas Thakur, Lord Chaitanya would glorify him. He would try to escape. It's very painful for a pure devotee to be glorified. It's as painful for a pure devotee to be glorified as a materialist loves to be. He gets so much boundless satisfaction from being glorified. So to the same degree, a devotee experiences boundless dissatisfaction from being glorified. But the Lord makes sure that you get glorified. If you try to avoid it, the Lord will arrange it. There are pastimes. These are described in Majjhila chapter 4. Great devotees who tried to avoid glorification like the plague, but still the Lord would arrange that their glories be noticed by everyone. So Murari Gupta and Haridas Thakur and Vasudev Dat, they were the emblem of humility. They would say, we're so fallen, we don't deserve to sit with the devotees. They would just lay down on the common road at a distance. Or Pundarik Vidyaniti would dress up like a materialist so no one would even recognize that he was a pure devotee. If you go to his house, what would you see? He's having opulent feasts and betel nuts and brass spittoons and brass plates, and he had servants fanning him, and they oiled his long black hair with amalaki oil, very opulent and ornate, and he had golden rings and jewels, and every look just like a materialist. Even Gadadhar, who is Srimati Radharani herself initially, was... could not detect the glories of Pundarik Vidyaniti. So just see. That means we also have to be very careful. In one lecture, Prabhupada said about devotees living with us in the ashram, Prabhupada said, be careful, you do not know who you're dealing with. Someone may have had, in his previous life, may have been a very advanced devotee and had a fall down, had to take birth again in ISKCON to finish up his business. We shouldn't laugh at it. If ISKCON sannyasi has gotten into difficulties and fallen down, we shouldn't laugh or gloat. Just see how fallen he is. Prabhupada was very displeased when Madhudvish Maharaj had difficulties and other sannyasis broadcast it. Madhudvish Swami was very dear to Prabhupada. He did tremendous service all over the world. He joined in San Francisco in 1967 and pushed on the Sankirtan in California tremendously. Then he went to Australia after Bali Mardan. Then when Madhudvish Swami got there, he increased it tremendously, put on giant Rath Yatras, increased the book distribution to a huge extent. He was pushing, he made Sydney and Melbourne fantastically opulent temples. But later on, he got into difficulties. He broke the regulations of sannyas. And Prabhupada said, you should have kept it private. You shouldn't broadcast it all over the world and say, you know, with that, you know, how happy we are that this person has fallen down. that we're better than him. We knew he wasn't so good after all, and now it's become obvious. It was very displeasing to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, please come back, be a grihastha. You can get married again and keep serving the mission. Prabhupada accepted sannyasis back into the movement if they were humble and ready to serve the mission again. Take up a role as an honest grihastha and continue with your service. Prabhupada was very merciful. He would always welcome devotees back. He welcomed back Hayagriva Prabhu and Madhudvij Swami and others. Also, Bali Mardhan himself had difficulties. Prabhupada did not want to excommunicate them. He built a house for everyone to serve together. So again, that's an offense. If you look at some ISKCON devotee and say, aha, just see, now I knew he was so fallen and now everyone is finding out. That's a big offense on your part. And Krishna says in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita that if someone has an accidental fall down, he is still to be considered saintly. And if you don't consider him saintly, that's an offense on your part. Prabhupada said, be careful who you're dealing with. You do not know who they are. That's ordinary. That's Bhakta Joe and Bhakta Dave in the ashram. It's not just someone who we think is so advanced. Be very careful. Be very humble in your dealings. Even Dhruva Maharaj was not even a pure devotee, even before he manifested himself as an exalted Vaishnava, because Suruchi offended him. She had to die. It's in the 4th canto. And he wasn't even a devotee, so now we can think, at least I can offend the karmis. Okay, I shouldn't offend the devotees, but I can take out all my vengeance on the karmis, the ignorant and fallen karmis. The real nature of Vaishnava, the 6 Goswamis in Vrindavan, they were offering obeisances to every ant. Raghunath Das Goswami's regular principle, every day he would offer 2,000 obeisances to the Vaishnavas and 1,000 obeisances to Krishna. He offered more obeisances to Vaishnavas than to Krishna himself. Anyone who came, a neophyte bhakti would come, the 6 Goswamis would give him a tour of the holy places of Vrindavan and all facilities to stay in Vrindavan and try to become a devotee. The Goswamis would worship everyone, even an ant. They'd offer obeisances. In the 11th canto, when Krishna is instructing Uddhava, Krishna says, one of the best processes for spiritual realization is to go out into the common road, and when you see a donkey or a dog, offer dandavat obeisances to that animal. Because the super soul and soul is there. What to speak of human beings? So we have to get the correct perspective on Vaishnava philosophy. You can't be too humble. You cannot be too humble. And this is how you get the taste. Kirtaneya Sadahari in the 3rd shloka of Shikshastika. That's how you get so much taste. And our whole goal is to get taste for the holy name. Taste for all aspects of devotional service comes from having the right attitude. What is the right attitude? Trinada piece in each other, more lower than a piece of grass in the street. And in 1968, Prabhupada was speaking to one devotee in Los Angeles. Prabhupada even brought that to another level. The devotee asked Prabhupada, what does it mean to be humble? Prabhupada said, you should think yourself lower than the excrement of a hog. Hog stool. And hog stool is the lowest of all stool because it's recycled stool. The hogs eat stool and their stool is even lower. So that's the most of all varieties of stool if you want to analyze. There's no more contaminated form of stool as hog stool. And we're supposed to be lower than that. And as a beginning process, this is actually very exalted. To genuinely feel like this requires a very high level of spiritual realization, which most of us may not have. So you can begin by thinking that we can't do anything without Krishna's help. You can't even move your hand neurophysiologically. We won't go through the neurophysiology now, but it's a fact. You cannot even move any part of your body without Krishna's help. So how can you be proud? And as you get old and sick, the material energy is ripping away all of your opulences, your good health, your strength, your intelligence, your longevity. The material energy ruthlessly rips away all of your opulences. So if you had such power, you would keep yourself from getting old. That's the first thing you would do. Keep yourself from getting sick. You have no power. You just have to suffer like a dog. When you get old and sick, you cannot take much shelter of modern molecular biological research to keep the body healthy. They're a long way away, long, long way down the road. You might say it's impossible, but in the seventh canto, there's Sanjeevani. Mayadhanava had actually, he was a demon. So that if Krishna lets the demons go long enough, maybe they will, because the body's a machine. But that's a long, don't hope for that. Or for a mere $2 million, you can have your body frozen like Walt Disney. It's a minor a minor problem is that the next 5 seconds after you shell out your $2 million, they pull out the plug. And when your body reaches room temperature, it rots. So I wouldn't put much hope in the modern molecular program for immortality. Because it's under Krishna's control. If Krishna chooses to give them the intelligence to develop immortality, thus far Krishna's not chosen to give them this intelligence because of their low karmic credit. So the Kaladanda is about to descend. Srila Prabhupada ki.